All right, let's go down to L.A. and bring in Andy Baggerly, Extra Bags. Andy, how are you?
Hey, Marty, how are you?
Very good. Glad to have you with us today. And I was talking about with Howard Bryan, Alex Rodriguez, and the 3,000 hits and all that stuff. How do you feel about it? When you saw the numbers come across, as Howard says, he's going to get near 700 home runs. He's got RBIs only behind Hank Aaron. How do you feel about it?
Well, you know, I was in the clubhouse yesterday, and they were showing A-Rod was batting. It was later in the game after he'd already hit the homer for his 3,000th hit. And Gregor Blanco was watching, too, and he turned to me, and he said, "You vote for the Hall of Fame, right?" And I said, "Yeah, yeah, I do." And he said, "What are you going to do with A-Rod?" And I said, "You know what? I really don't know, and maybe I don't have to know for a while, and it's a good thing you have 5 years after someone retires to sort of think about their career and what it means and what the context is. But I mean, I vote, we've talked about this, I vote for Barry Bonds, I vote for Roger Clemens, because I think you can probably not nail down in a court of law, but you can kind of figure out when, you know, they probably started having some artificial enhancement to their career. And you can look at the MVPs and the Cy Youngs and all the accolades that they won and how they dominated their sport, you know, prior to that time period when maybe you can realistically assume that they started on some artificial enhancement. And with A-Rod, you almost don't know. You don't know if there's any point in his career, even when he was, you know, 19, 20, 21 years old with the Mariners, if that was authentic. I mean, you really don't know. And he's lied so much about it, you really can't take anything he says at face value. And I think that the fact that he has been punished, that he has flunked the test, you know, like Rafael Palmeiro before him, the dice kind of been cast among voters. And Palmeiro is not even on the ballot anymore because he didn't get 5%. And he got 500 homers and he got 3,000 hits. So I think A-Rod's going to fall into that category. I think he's going to linger on the ballot longer than a Palmeiro will. But, you know, I don't think he's even going to pull the 35% or so that Bonds and Clemens are getting.
No, he's not as lovable as those two, and believe it or not.
Well, and that shouldn't matter. I mean, that shouldn't matter at all. I mean, Eddie Murray was not very lovable, and he got in on the first ballot. But, you know, you're right. I don't think that should be a factor with anybody. It might be for a few people, but I you know, it makes it hard to sympathize with him, that's for sure.
Yeah, but I put him, see, I put his accomplishments in the same category as Bonds. For just the awesomeness of what he's done, and he's done in his whole career. It's just amazing when you step back and say in the world of numbers and baseball numbers, what he accomplished. And I think he's right there with Bonds. I really do. You can take Bonds and the home runs and the MVPs. But what this guy has done from age 19 to 40 is incredible, even with the PEDs.
Well, I think this year is pretty remarkable. I don't think anyone expected him to be any kind of contributor whatsoever. They thought he'd be extreme dead weight. And you can argue he's been the most valuable player on the Yankees, and that's not a team that you know is 20 games under 500 right now. They've been you know, competitive. So I mean, yeah, you have to say hats off a little bit, because nobody wanted this guy around. At least when Bonds was chasing Aaron, he was being cheered in San Francisco, and you know, I don't think. And it's not like the Giants were shunning him at that time, his own team. Well, now you got the Yankees, who basically did not want this guy to even come back. And he's coming back almost despite them. And he's turning out to really be helping them. And you wonder where they'd be in the standings without him.
Yeah, boy, it's a good subject. I will drop it with this, but I think he's as great a ball player as Bonds and Clemens. I put him in that class. Maybe, you know, he's different because of all the lying and CBS and 60 Minutes and all that stuff. It, you know, makes him worse. But as a ball player, for what he's done, I put him in that class. So we'll see how this plays out, but I'm glad to get your opinion on it. Last night, two names were said in very nice fashion. One, Buster Posey, who stole a bag and then hit a grand slam off of Mike Bolsinger, who, if he threw one more curveball, probably would have set the NCAA record for curveballs in a game. And he hung one to Posey, knocked it out. And the great Roger Bresnahan. Even Dave Fleming was talking about him last night. How'd you like that?
Yeah, Roger Bresnahan was the last Giants catcher to hit a grand slam and steal a base in the same game, which is a little bit of a random factoid. But what's neat about Roger Bresnahan, in 1903, he was the first guy ever to wear the entire set of catcher's gear behind the plate. Some guys wore, you know, a chest protector or, you know, the mask. Came about in the 1880s, started with in college in the Ivy League, I think. But before, catchers would stand way behind the batter and they would field the pitches after a bounce. And then somebody got up back closer to the batter in about the 1880s and, you know, had a few teeth knocked out. And finally someone said, you know what, let's not be stupid here. Let's put a mask on. And Bresnahan was the first guy to go in full gear, looking like Darth Vader back there with the chest protector, the shin guards, the mask. And there was a New York Times story written the first day he wore the shin guards on opening day. And a foul tip hit off the shin guard and made a sort of a clinking sound. And apparently people in the stands were like tittering with laughter because they were challenging his manhood for you know, wearing all of this stuff behind the plate. So when we were talking to Posey, he mentioned Roger Bresnahan, and Buster didn't quite know how to react to that. And I told him about the tools of ignorance. I said, Buster, he did you a solid. Could you imagine playing the position without all that gear?
Yeah, I love it. That was great. I'm so glad you did that. I'm glad Dave had fun with it on the broadcast as well. Andy Baggerly is with us. Father's Day is tomorrow. The book Giant Splash is out. Andy, if you need a gift for a father, I say it. The stories of AT&T Park are wonderful. Are you doing anything special for Father's Day around the book?
Nope, I'm in L.A., so not much I can do. Just going to cover Sunday night baseball, but certainly I appreciate you mentioning it, and it does seem like there's hardly anything that makes as good a Father's Day present as a book, unless you happen to know a father who doesn't have enough neckties already, which is pretty much nobody, so you don't need a necktie. You can't read a necktie. But you can read the book and you can read it over and over. And what's cool about the book, I know we talked about it a little bit, but it's not like Band of Misfits. It's more of a greatest hits book. And you can skip around and read the chapter about the All-Star Game in 2007, or read the chapter about Darren Baker and JT Snow, or read the chapter about Jonathan Sanchez's no-hitter, or if you want to get into fresher memories, Travis Ishikawa's game where they clinched the pennant last year. So 15 years of Giants history, and it's certainly chock full of pretty incredible things that we've seen at AT&T Park.
That's a lot of fun. I went through a period with the kids where I got a sweatsuit every year. So I've gone through that period. So I haven't gone through too many necktie periods, but sweatsuits. Sweatsuits were big. They were big in the 80s.
Like the New Jersey leisure sweatsuit, like the ones Paulie Walnuts wore on The Sopranos?
No, not quite. No, not. This is more like an NBA, you know, the jacket and, the pants and that kind of stuff. You know, that's
what about a leisure suit? Now, you had a leisure suit back in the
yes,
day, didn't you, Marty?
Yes, I did. I don't know if it was a leisure suit, but it looked like some sort of tinfoil or something like that. I'm not sure.
With the butterfly collar sticking
yeah.
out?
Oh, yeah.
The
yeah.
lapels?
And believe me, I went to court like that. Come on, are you kidding? Very different era, but that's why we love life. It changes. All right.
Was there a disco ball in the courtroom?
Speaking of that, Matt Cain tonight, PV tomorrow. Andy, I just have this feeling with the rotation the way it is that every day there's an audition. That if Vogelsong has three bad ones in a row, he's out. Linscomb, you're in trouble. You're out. Heston, boy, you better pull it together. You're out. Hudson, you're not doing well on the road. You've had a few bad ones. You're out. Is this possible? I mean, how are they going to deal with all this? And are they really auditioning just about every time out?
Yeah, I think they are. I think they have to look at it that way because, the biggest problem with this team, and it seems a little bit it doesn't seem like it's a problem because they lead the majors in it with 11 shutouts. But, they're just not getting as many consistently deep outings, especially lately from Lincecum and from Hudson. And, Hudson is going to be 40 years old next month. And, Bochy's had a little bit of a quicker hook with him. And I wouldn't be shocked if he has a bad one today that, maybe there's a little reason here or there they could find a way to put him on the DL. But the other thing about Hudson, talking to some of the people around the team, is that, you go back to the game in Colorado and, he gets all warmed up, ready to go. Then there's a rain delay of 2 hours and he starts up and he's got nothing. And that's one thing they're a little bit concerned about is if they do put a pause button on him for a couple of weeks, can they get him started back up again? It is a little bit of a concern. Lincecum obviously could pitch out of the bullpen. We've seen that he's done that successfully. Vogelsong was supposed to start the year as a long reliever, so you think from an incumbent-type standpoint, he would be the guy to go. But, he had great stuff in his last outing and pitched so well all through May. So I think that this is absolutely a day-to-day conversation that they're having. And Chris Heston is the guy who has options. So from a roster flexibility standpoint, he would be the guy to go. So he's the guy who I think would most be on the bubble if he starts pitching poorly. But you can't look at his body of work and say that he is, you know, their fourth or fifth best starter. He's clearly been their second best starter behind Madison Bumgarner. So you know, they got a lot to noodle through, and that's one of the reasons that Brian Sabian and Special Assistant Lee Elder are going to be in Sacramento tonight and tomorrow to personally watch TV, to watch Kane, because, you know, you don't want to make a move that reduces your flexibility or subtract a player even that you can't necessarily bring back. Just to bring up a Jake Peavy, and then all of a sudden Peavy's not ready. He can't get through five innings with fewer than 100 pitches or whatever. You want to make sure that you're strengthening your club, not just doing a guy a favor.
Boy, absolutely. And that's what June is all about. And they say, well, maybe by the All-Star break, so there's no rush with them. But and I agree, there's just no rush until you have to make a move. Because yeah. June is the time you figure out who you have or what you got. This is sort of like the second base thing last year. You can't start making moves unless you see Kane and Peavy come back and do something. And at some point, they've got to see them in a major league game before they do anything. So we'll see what happens with that.
One thing to add to that, Marty, is that Peavy's 30-day rehab clock is up on Monday. So Tuesday, yeah. They would have to do something. And they could always, you know, just leave him on the DL. But they can't just leave him in the minor leagues to continue to start. They'd have to pause him and then restart it at a later date. Mm. So they'd have to. There's some sort of action that would have to take place with Jake.
All right, we'll find out on Monday. Last thought for you, Andy Baggerly with us, Extra Bags on Twitter. Always enjoy following him during the game. What do you think of the Dodgers? They've struggled at home. You got Gonzalez in a deep slump. Puig is not hitting. Rollins hasn't seen much above 200. How do the Dodgers look to you?
Well, and then you look at Jock Peterson, who's got 17 homers, but he's in a little bit of a downturn now, too. They've been without Puig for a good long time. Carl Crawford is on the shelf. You know, of course, Ryu, I think, was a big loss because no matter how you're doing, when you've got three really good pitchers you can throw out there in a row, they find a way to stop momentum when it's going in the wrong direction. And that's what Kershaw and Greinke and Ryu are able to do. Well, all of a sudden, now you're down to those two guys, Greinke and Kershaw, neither of whom we'll see in this series. And if one of them loses, then, you know, maybe you end up getting a bad turn through the rotation. But, you know, the Dodgers are the team to beat for the Giants. So they knew that from day one. They have to feel good about the fact that they're 8-2 against them. But as Bruce Bochy said, you know what? The Diamondbacks are 7-3 against us, and the Dodgers are 7-3 against them. So, you know, there's not a whole lot you can take out of it. And other than the fact that, hey, the Giants knew they had to play good quality fundamental baseball against the Dodgers, and they've done that. And they've obviously gotten the better of the Bumgarner-Kershaw matchups, 3-for-3 thus far, which is a big help. I think they realize that they can't afford to rest on any laurels. They have to continue to play well against the Dodgers. And I always thought, you know, the team that beats up the most on the Diamondbacks and Rockies will be the team that wins the division. And thus far, the Dodgers have a little bit of an edge there. And, you know, maybe you can throw the Padres in now among those teams that you got to beat because they've gone through the managerial change. It's not working out the way that they thought it would. And if this is going to be a two-team race, you know, then those two teams have to beat up on the other three teams in the division.
Yeah, we'll see what happens this week when the Padres come in. Bryce Harper, not DL'd yet, but I'm just haven't added the days up yet. But if he gets DL'd, it could be right when the Giants get there. I think that would be around the 15 days, something like that.
Yeah, I saw that. And the other thing that I don't know if you saw, but Fernandez of Miami will be making his season debut on July 2nd. They've already announced that. And it's going to be against the Giants. So, you know, maybe they have to deal with Fernandez for a day, but maybe they don't have to deal with Bryce Harper for a series. So, you know, good luck, bad luck kind of thing.
Yeah, be interesting. Andy, thank you so much, and I hope to chat with you tomorrow before the game.
Okay, thanks, Marty. Happy Father's Day to you.
Oh, thank you so much. All right, that is Andy Baggerly. If you're looking for a good gift, Giant Splash is the one.